Let's Talk Letts, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.
Hello, and welcome to our latest podcast, Let's Talk Letts. I'm Heidi Sheffield, the CEO of the Lettings Hub, the tenant referencing business that got good at tech. And Let's Talk Letts is our regular roundup of news and views on a whole range of subjects spanning the private rental sector. In this episode, I'm really pleased to be joined by Josh Rayner, who is the CEO of Rayner Personnel, who are specialist property recruiters. Welcome to you, Josh.
Morning, Heidi. Nice to see you.
And you. So before we get into some of the questions, tell us about how long you've been in the recruitment game and how did you get into it in the first place?
Morning, Heidi. Thank you again for having me on your beautiful, amazing podcast. Really looking forward to talking to you this morning. So I've been in the industry for 19 years. I was 17 when I joined the industry. And God, have we seen some changes over them 19 years. I started out as a lettings negotiator. My claim to fame was I did a record 3 months with my first ever employer before I didn't really want to turn up on a Saturday. So that was a short-lived career. I then bounced over to recruitment and haven't looked back since.
So obviously at the moment, what we're keen to understand is how is the recruitment market at the moment? Obviously we are a people industry, the letting space. And obviously there's a lot of talk about cost of living, which we know affects all of us in our personal life, but it's obviously having an effect on businesses too. And I'm keen to understand what is the impact on people recruiting and how they value their people at the moment. So what trends are you seeing in the property market recruitment space at the minute?
As you can imagine, I get asked that question on a daily basis. And actually, people are still hiring. And actually, year to date, we're up about 25% on last year's hiring. And I can see that just continue to grow. We're an industry that relies on people. Yes, there's some clever tech out there that takes sort of the £5 jobs away. But actually, people want to transact with people. So the cost of living obviously has bitten people personally. And we're seeing a raise actually in basic salaries. So people are paying slightly more for good people. We only recruit in sector. So typically, we're finding somebody at a senior neg plus experience, and somebody who's been there 2 or 3 years and more so. So we're seeing sort of the average salaries go up by at least 5K to get that talent. There's clearly a war for talent as well, because good people are hard to come by. And if they've got good pipelines or they're really good at what they do, they're having to be headhunted by firms like ours to really turn their head. So lots of companies are struggling to find good people. And actually, when you get a good person, you can make sure you're coaching and supporting them to make sure they're there long term. So effectively, people are paying more and obviously trying to get the best people.
So obviously you recruit across kind of the whole of sector. So letting, sales, and obviously to kind of people like us, suppliers. Is there a change across that space at all in terms of what people are looking for? Or have you seen any kind of anomaly in the fact that lettings is growing, sales is shrinking? Because obviously we've heard that side of the housing market's under a bit of strain at the minute. And then also for all of us that support the industry, how are we doing? What's going on in the prop tech space?
So prop tech has taken a massive hit in our business. So if you look at 2023, we're probably down actually by about 40%, believe it or not. And that's because most of the lettings agents and sales agents have been hit, more sales and lettings. And therefore, do they really want to put a bump in the road and change their CRM or change their portal or change their referencing provider when actually all they want to do is list and sell property? So the supply market, I think, is naturally down. It's going to be because of transactions. But what we've seen is lots of companies change their sort of field sales operation. So they're having an internal call center function. If companies do have a field sales operation, they're changing their role. So before it was an account manager stroke BDM, they're actually taking the initiative to say, if you're a farmer, you're definitely somebody going out there and account managing. And if you're a hunter, you're definitely new business, you're a BDM. So then two roles have been split in the field. And that's really to maximize potential with keeping and retaining clients. So they're purely focused on building long-term relationships. And the hunters obviously go out there winning new business, which is obviously vital in a market that is being hit by transactions.
Yeah, I understand. So if we kind of look forward to next year, if you were to get your glass ball out and look into 2024, do you think we're going to see the same again, or is there going to be some change?
I think it's going to be a tough year next year. There's obviously a possible change of government. And as you can see in kind of recent months, there's lots of people buying other businesses. So loads and loads and loads of the bigger boys, the private equity boys, the LRGs, the Lomans, the Dexes that are buying lettings books and also buying sales businesses. And I think that will continue going into 2024. And I think we're in for a tough market. I think Q4 this year is going to be particularly tough. And I think that will continue into Q1 for sure.
Yeah, and obviously when people make acquisitions, they're doing it in the main to grow their revenue and grow their portfolio and be bigger and stronger in their space. But naturally, that brings about redundancies often when there's kind of consolidation of staff. Have you seen much of that in terms of people kind of contacting you because they've lost their job? Or is it more people just wanting to earn more because of, you know, maybe they genuinely just want to earn more, or because cost of living pressures have kind of made them need to earn more? Is there any change, I suppose, there in terms of why people are coming to the market?
Yeah, I think it's both, Heidi. As you know, Pebble Bricks obviously have changed hands in 2023. There's lots of people made redundant. There's some of the bigger, larger independents that are closing branches on a weekly basis, but they're not being reported on. So there are people or roles being made redundant, not people being redundant, but roles being made redundant. And we're actually losing 5% of our workforce every single year that are jumped into different sectors, whether that be financial services, leisure, hospitality, and other tech providers. And we need to do something about that, because we can't be an industry that continues to lose great people, because otherwise we're going to have no good people left. So I think there's definitely some more blood on the carpet and some more redundancies to be had. Like you said, when people buy businesses, they might have that core head office function. Therefore, there's no need to bring that across. And also, great salespeople, they're always needed. But again, in some instances, if they've got branches in the particular area they're currently trading in, then roles, sadly, might be at risk. So, yeah, that's what I can see changing.
And we heard in a recent podcast, actually, that tech is obviously taking away work from people, which I think we're all wise enough to know is going to be the case. But, you know, and if we even think about how we do our shopping, you know, we used to always see the checkout assistant. Then if we had a basket, we could self-checkout. Now, if we've got a whole weekly shop, we can do it on our own. And that's, you know, tech really replacing people, or machines replacing people. But for our industry, obviously, we're a people business. Are people not our biggest asset?
They are, and I think they continue to be, especially in my lifetime. I think until robots take over, then that's not going to happen. But from my point of view, people will transact with people. We're not talking about a £2.99 bottle of Fairy Liquid. We're talking around someone's biggest asset, whether that's sales or rentals. So I can't see that changing. And yes, you're absolutely right. Staff are the biggest cost on a business's P&L, but they're also their biggest asset. And yes, AI, for example, has allowed efficiency in the business, and that we use it all the time in our business to write job adverts and social media posts. And I think there's definitely a place for it that will help efficiencies and systems and processes. But I do not think it will take over from someone selling a property or renting a property. Definitely not in my lifetime anyway.
Yeah, and I think if people are genuinely the most important thing in a business, then, and great people make great businesses, it's how do we all ensure that we get the best in the business? So can you share with us a few tips and tricks of how do we make ourselves attractive to the best? What do people really want from an employer?
It's a great question. And for me, it's probably around one big word, which is trust. Lots of people say they trust their staff, but actually they are on them like Big Brother all the time. There's rumours of cameras in offices, people getting fired because they're stopping at Costa Coffee on the way back to the office to get a cup of coffee. There's lots of supervision going on. And I think where the market's tightened, more of that is rife in the industry. So I think people are looking for trust, especially Gen Z, and millennials are going, right, well, look, we just want you to trust us. Otherwise, why would you offer us the job in the first place? We're also looking for flexibility. Obviously, after COVID, there's that COVID hangover, where actually people were used to from home and actually were quite productive. And obviously the market's slightly changed. They've gone back into branches, and that micromanagement is now rife. They want that flexibility, all that hybrid working. So we're seeing most suppliers do a 3-day week in London, for example, and 2 days at home. an agency are being a bit more flexible around letting people work from home where they need to make sure they can deliver the job. But I think that's what people are looking for, as well as obviously being paid the right money. We're still an industry that doesn't pay well, and I can't see that changing until regulation comes in. But we need to pay for the people we have and the experience and expertise they bring to the business.
We're definitely a kind of a transitional industry, with kind of people leaving their current employer to go and work within the same town for another employer that does a really similar thing. And sometimes that isn't necessarily a money move, is it? It's for they've been there a certain amount of time, or there's something, a niggle, I suppose, that has kind of become a bigger niggle for them that's made them move. Taking away the kind of salary side of it, what and the trust side of it, which actually is a really interesting concept, which we might come back to in a minute. What are the things that really employees don't like about their employer that kind of tips them to that point of starting to look?
I think it's the missed promises and the sort of change of goalposts. So they set out an objective for that particular year, and that changes throughout the year, obviously due to market conditions. But a fake promise and not delivering on that obviously upsets employees. So that's a massive, massive one. I think a toxic culture as well is huge. People want to be in a culture where they're appreciated, they've got a long-term career progression, and as obviously then things change, that's when they get itchy feet and they want to move. We've still got a huge attrition piece in our industry. 50% of people move every single year. So if you hire 10 people in January, you'll have 5 by December. And that needs to change to make sure you're giving great customer service to your client, because if they're calling up and they're dealing with John, Harry and Mary, who are they dealing with? Because every single month or every single quarter that changes. It's not great for the customer, which at the end of the day is the people that are paying your bill.
Yeah, and it costs businesses so much money, doesn't it, with that amount of training and knowledge, the investment in those people, but then that knowledge walking out the door to then only replace them with somebody that might be exactly the same in terms of their skill set. Often we're not getting better, so it can be a false economy. What are the biggest tips then maybe for an employer interview? Because whereas back in the olden days, as it were, a candidate would be very much selling themselves to an employer, I guess now it's a lot more 50-50, and with a competitive market, let's say, and letting agents, estate agents and anyone in sector needing people, because we're a people business, how do they make themselves stand out, and how important is that first impression?
So Heidi, absolutely right. Employers are interviewing the employees, but the employees are also interviewing the employer. So it's very, very much a 50-50 interview these days. My kind of advice would be is they need to become a brand of choice, and that's digitally. So when people look at your website, you've got to show your culture, and you've also got to show career potential for that candidate that you're interviewing. So there's got to be some kind of highlights on the website to show the career progression that you give as an employer. And also the interview process is slightly changing. So lots of people are interviewing over this medium, so a video interview initially, and then bring people into the office after that first initial Teams or Zoom call, and actually opening up to meet their teams as well. So rather than it just being a one-on-one interview, which might last 45 minutes, they're inviting several colleagues into the meeting room as well to be part of that interview process, so they can tell stories around how they've been successful, what career progression there is, what training, support, et cetera, there are, to convince, I suppose, that candidate to join that business. So absolutely, 50-50 interview process. There's lots and lots of jobs, and there will continue to be lots and lots of jobs. We're never shy of any jobs. It's actually finding the right people for them roles, and you've got to showcase why someone would want to work for you rather than the other way around, which is normally, like you said, back in the day, where they need to change their mindset.
I totally agree with everything that you've said. When we now have people to the office to meet us for the first time, you can near enough see them zone out a little bit when you kind of talk about the pension scheme or the benefits that you might have. When you start to show them that, you know, that we do a quarterly award where everybody gets together, or they can see free fruit and free snacks in the kitchen, and they get to see something like we have a cupboard of dreams where people get prizes from, that, for especially the younger generation, has far more engagement in terms of kind of conversation with them than anything else that we typically talk about. And it's those small things that often kind of win people over in the fact that they create an impression. So what, when people come back to you after they've attended an interview, how much do they pick up on the small things in an office or with a company?
Lots. So that is a massive, massive part of the interview process. And actually, you're absolutely right. Giving people their birthdays off or unlimited holiday, or you've got free snacks, like you said, and award schemes is actually more appealing. You remember back in the day, it was all about a company car. If I get a BMW 318i, I'm on board. It was all about the car you drove, actually, not the basic salary. Now, employers are going away from cars for carbon footprint and cost and lots of different reasons. And now they're paying more and more car allowances. But actually, the small things count more than they've ever done before. And that all builds around that business's ethos and their culture, and obviously attracts candidates to join them.
One of the things that we do regularly as a business is we list all of our employees top to bottom with their salaries. And we actually have a look in the market to see that actually, if we were to look for that type of role right now, what is it that we would be paying? And how valuable are these people to us right now? But if they left, what would we actually be doing? And it is a real sense check sometimes and a good reminder of how markets move and how they change, but also how you shouldn't forget your loyal people. You shouldn't forget the people that have been there a long time. Are we making a mistake? I suppose, in the fact that we're not doing that enough and we're not kind of being prompted to do something before an employee has to come and do it to us as the employer. And often that is as extreme as just resign. And that sometimes obviously comes totally out of the blue.
So I always say to any client of ours, you should always be recruiting. Of course, I'm going to say that I'm a recruitment consultant. But actually, I want people to see who's in the market. I think it's good for a business to understand who's out there. But also, it's great for you to have a subs bench. It's the worst possible time. It's like when you go food shopping and you're hungry. The amount of rubbish I pick up when I'm hungry that I don't want or it's not healthy, but you just buy it because you're hungry and you go, I can't wait to open up Bay of Crips on the way home. And it's the same thing when you're hiring. Actually, when you've got a burning platform, you just take on anyone. And that's why the attrition is so high. So I always say to any client, if you get offered somebody that's a real superstar, interview them, even if you haven't got a job. As long as the candidate knows that there's no immediate vacancy, but you want to build up a substance in the future, that is definitely the right thing to do. Otherwise, like you said, you're there holding the baby when the person has their resignation in, when actually you could be two steps ahead with an idea of who your next target is. And actually, I think you're doing something totally different to other clients and understanding and benchmarking where what you should be paying the market, which is brilliant. And you need to be able to move with that if it goes up and if it goes down. And most companies don't do that. They just pay what they paid 10 years ago, and that's a going rate that they have in their mind, and that's it. So you're being actually innovative in what you're doing, which is understanding where the market's going and remunerating people accordingly within changes, which is great.
Yeah, and we've definitely seen, you know, at job interview now, it's not the salary isn't the first question. Often it is, do I get to work from home? To your point earlier, that seems to be like really a hot topic. And actually, some people really, really want to do that and others don't really. But it's just like, you know, where's my freedom? I suppose, where's my flexibility? What type of employer are you? I guess that's kind of what they're checking out. Another thing that we've definitely seen to work in the past, we have a fairly big operational department of about 60 to 70 people, and therefore the chance of a role coming up in that department through business growth or somebody leaving is often quite high. So often we'll go through a recruitment process when we know a job might be coming up, but we might not have one now, and we will find a candidate, we will vet them, we will get them to the place of being suitable, and we will say to them, we're absolutely, you've passed recruitment, we would love to have you on the team, but we don't have a start date for you at this point in time, and we'll get back to you with that. And actually, when that happens, when you go back to those people, half the time they've gone and found another job or they're not interested, but actually half the time they're absolutely ready to come and you've already got your pipeline. So that's just a little tip for anybody. If they've got an area where it's quite transactional, it's just to recruit ahead, because people that genuinely want to join your business will wait around. If you've done a good enough job selling it to them in the first place. But is there any kind of closing comments on any final tips or tricks or anything that you would like to share with the audience on recruitment?
I think, like you said, it's planning ahead. So that's massive takeaway from anybody listening to this podcast. Plan ahead. If you haven't got a vacancy, see good people. If anybody comes up, I'd always be running ads in the background. that's not to upset your current team, and you can make sure that's transparent across the business, but always be speaking to people, because you should always be recruiting. A business that's standing still is never growing. I would always say, make sure you've got your recruitment processes, strategy agreed beforehand. Like I said, going food shopping when you're hungry is never a good thing. And recruiting when you've got a burning platform and you need to put someone in the seat is not a great time to be hiring. So make sure you've got your strategy, and you've got them questions that you want to ask, and killer questions that you're going to ask every single candidate, to make sure you've got some kind of consistency along that as well. I'd also look at other things in the business as well. So we've got a few clients that are looking at their diversity and inclusion policies. That's huge at the moment, as you can imagine. And there's also people looking at hardship funds. So whether that's the cost of living crisis, or somebody might have a bereavement in the family and they're struggling financially to assist the family, having a hardship fund is something that I think is going to be the next thing, I think, out there. And also, like you said, the hybrid approach. We're getting lots of people saying, it's all about work, we get that, but we want it to be flexible around our family and our lives. Actually, a job is part of our lives, but it's not all-encompassing. And I think as a business owner, we think, well, it's our business, so we work 24/7, and why shouldn't everybody else? They are employees, you are the boss. So I think people need to look at that. And charity seems to be a huge thing that's really underestimated. So getting out in the community and giving back, a business that does that is very attractive to people as well. So becoming a kind of an employer of choice, I think, is definitely how you're going to win. And again, look, no one should dread going to work on a Monday. And that's why we've come up with that Make Mondays Matter slogan. There's so much choice around there. Obviously, mental health is rife, especially after COVID. And if you're unhappy at work, you can do something about it. So whether that's you go on the hunt yourself, whether that's you come from a recruitment company, or you speak to your friends and your colleagues out of the business you work in, do something about it. Because somebody that's not happy is not going to be happy themselves. They're not going to be giving a great service to their client. And you need to get out and make a change. So there would be my sort of takeaway tips, Heidi.
Okay, thanks. And actually, that just has kind of resonated with me a little bit, because actually, a lot of this is just about being decent and being fair as an employer. And actually, I think if you behave that way, you often get unexpected benefits that you didn't necessarily think and plan for. And I can think of one that we've done this year, which is, because of the cost of living, I started noticing, you know, some staff, as they were getting towards the end of the month, you know, what they're eating at lunch had changed, or, you know, they were asking sometimes for an advance, just to get their bus fare. So what we did is we said, well, actually, what we're going to do is we're going to provide lunch in our kitchen for everybody, which is really, we purchased an extra microwave at a cost of about 50 quid. And then it's like soup or tomatoes on toast, beans on toast, noodles, like whatever it is. But it's a hot meal every day for anyone, whoever wants it. And not only did that kind of go down well in the fact that staff appreciated it, but what started to happen is they all started to eat together. So actually the community element came back a little bit, with people kind of being in a hub all at the same time. But also what we got is people then kind of saying, well, I don't mind working a bit late tonight. I'll just go to the kitchen and grab, you know, something to eat, and then I'll come back up and crack on. And actually that was never the intention when we started, but it's surprising. By giving a little bit, you can often get more back. Josh, thank you so much for a fantastic chat. Before you go, we're asking all of our podcast guests for a funny story or anecdote. Do you have one for us? They've been very good so far.
Hi, Dee. I can share a recent story with you with a candidate, actually, went on interview, because I think that's quite appropriate, bearing in mind we're on this podcast, which was they went in for an interview, and they got asked to sell a cup of water in the interview. And you've always heard, obviously, the sell me that pen kind of question. But this one was a little bit of a curveball, sell me that glass of water. So the candidate pulled out her CV from her bag and set fire to it in the interview. This was a second interview. And put it in the waste paper bin and said, how much do you pay for that glass of water now? And she got the job, and she's one of the most successful negotiators they've now got in the business. So random fact. But yeah, what a close.
Yeah, innovation right there. To ensure you never miss an episode of Let's Talk Let's, please follow us on Spotify or wherever you listen to your podcast. Please leave us a review if you like us, and thank you very much for listening.
Let's Talk Let's, an original podcast from the Lettings Hub.